Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Oh, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and I can tell you that after reviewing the material we're going to be talking about today, what's toxic, what's not, I am so fortunate, I feel, to be able to have Dr. Gary Ginsberg on the air with us today, because it is information that is not meant to promote fear and paranoia, but it's meant to inform and it's meant to educate. And that is what I like to think my programming brings to you. What's toxic, what's not. Welcome, Dr. Ginsberg. I'm so delighted that you're able to be with us today.
Thanks so much, Donna. I'm really glad that you got a copy of the book and you had a chance to look it over.
Oh, look it over. My highlighter was going crazy. I want to give some information about you and your associate, Brian Towal, or is it...
Tall, as in Tall Booth, just spelled a little differently.
All right, great. Well, I wanted to be sure I had the pronunciation correct. Now, you are the senior toxicologist at the Connecticut Department of Public Health.
That's right.
And you hold faculty appointments at the medical schools at Yale University and the University of Connecticut.
Right.
You are also a member of the National Academy of Sciences panel on biomonitoring.
And another NAS panel that I was just put on to review EPA's risk assessment methods. Yeah, so I'm down in Washington a lot.
Oh, my goodness. Now, Brian Towal supervises the Environmental and Occupational Health Assessment Program in the Connecticut Department of Public Health.
Right.
And he works very closely with a number of U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Right.
In helping communities avoid or come to understand what their exposures to toxins are.
Right.
And
right.
What they could be.
Right.
And this is so massive. I mean, this is something that hasn't just happened overnight. Let's face it, we live in a chemical world, period.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anything and everything that is around us is a composite of some type.
Right.
But as individuals, we have developed, as people over the centuries, we have developed materials, products, all kinds of things. And in our world today, fortunately, we have some of the technology that's being utilized. We are able to even know what questions to ask. But your book covers so many different arenas, toxics at home at work, the toxins that we get in our food, what we eat, drink, and buy at the store, what we breathe, our yard and neighborhood, you know, bringing it all together. One might read this and say, oh, you know, what the heck? What difference does it make?
Well, no, Donna, that's not where we were going with this. We're trying to separate the wheat from the chaff and point out some of the myths that are overblown. Things like mold is probably not as toxic as the fear factor would indicate, but also to try to prioritize. And not everybody has every issue at their house or at their workplace or at the kid's school. And so we're trying to show you what to be on the lookout for. There's a lot of stuff that's in consumer products, and we try to show how you could start going to the greener, less contaminant-ridden product. And we're not expecting people to switch over all at once. We try to make people understand that some of these things are long-term chronic risks, and that if you can cut into your exposures today, that may serve you very well when you're 70 or 80 and your friends are getting diseases and you're not, because
mm-hmm.
perhaps you figured it out or when you're 20 or 30 or 40.
Absolutely. I think that the way you present this, the way you and Brian Towal present this, it's just, you know, it's absolutely marvelous. Now, let's define two terms, and this is right at the beginning of your book, but I'd like my audience to understand them. What is toxicology and epidemiology?
Sure. They go hand in glove with each other. Toxicology is the study of how chemicals can damage bodily systems. Typically, those studies are done in laboratories under highly controlled conditions, often in laboratory animals. And so we understand what chemicals can do, the hazard potential of chemicals from these animal studies. You don't want to use humans as guinea pigs, so we use guinea pigs or mice or rats. Epidemiology, on the other hand, is the study of populations of people and what causes them to have illness. And so from that we can understand by patterns of exposure, by where people live, by where pollutants are, by what's in their urine, what's in their hair. You know, we could do biomonitoring and understand what people are exposed to, and we relate that back to how much cardiovascular disease they have, how much diabetes they have, how much cancer, how much neurological disorders, et cetera, et cetera. We could start drawing those kinds of links, and then when we bring that back to the toxicology that have been shown in animal studies, then you could really add one and one together and say, ah, we now know that this chemical, like lead, causes this neurological problem in children, which could actually lead to hyperactivity in school and can lead to criminal behavior and can lead to the fall of the Roman Empire. And you really make a full case out of it.
Mm-hmm. It's fascinating because many of these chemicals, and you mentioned lead, have been around for centuries. And
way before industrial activities, of course.
Absolutely. And my husband and I were having a conversation this morning because I was sharing some of your information in your book, and he said, you know, it brings to mind what we learned when we were in Russia and those golden cupolas that they have, you know, on top of the buildings.
Okay.
A few centuries ago, the way that they would put the gold on, they would use mercury and mix the gold in with the mercury, put it on, and then they use sulfuric acid to take the mercury out of the gold. Of course, the life expectancy of the workers was half an hour. And that was, you know, we just were sitting there listening to this
appalled,
with our mouths open and going, oh, you've got to be kidding.
Well, you know, we've learned a lot about toxicology through the centuries, based upon people like the Borgias who used arsenic to poison their prey. And we've learned toxicology by those kinds of accidents in workers that, you know, lead was mined in ancient Rome. And there were studies done of what was wrong with these miners and why they couldn't work for very long or their neurological problems. So we've learned about toxic chemicals through the human experiments. And unfortunately, those human experiments are continuing today. And that's why it's so important. I mean, it gives me job security, I suppose, but that's why it's so important to have ongoing investigations. And, you know, there are so many products on the market which are not tested, which are not well vetted by either the industry that's putting them out there or by the regulatory authorities. And so it really is a human experiment. Things are better. I don't want to project that the sky is falling and everything is carcinogenic, da-da-da-da, but because we have gotten rid of many contaminants from our food supply, from our consumer products that were known bad actors, we've eliminated the worst pesticides, and now the newest wave of pesticides, the pyrethrins that we're using, are better than the DDTs that were persistent, are better than the organophosphate pesticides, which were cousins of nerve gas agents that Hitler used in World War II. So, you know, we've improved in that regard. We've gotten mercury out of a lot of things. We've gotten lead out of so many different things. PCBs we've banned. We've banned a lot of uses of arsenic, for example. So things have gotten a lot better. The big ticket nasty items, the obvious ones, the low-hanging fruit, we've banned a lot of that stuff. But yet we spend more time than ever indoors than ever before. Our homes are more airtight than ever before. Our indoor environment is really a reservoir of toxic chemicals in all of the consumer products that still haven't been well vetted. And so while they're not going to be as obvious in terms of causing adverse effects, they could still add up to be asthma triggers, or they could still be add up to be endocrine disruptors. We have a special focus on the book on endocrine disruptors because our fertility has gone down. over the course of the last 25 or 30 years. And the number one birth defect now in boys is hypospadias, which is where the ending of the where the urethra comes out, where the urine stream comes out.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the side of the penis instead of on top. And why is that? You know, and it's the endocrine disruptors that the baby is getting in utero. So these are still coming through our consumer products. They're coming through our built environment. I don't know how many people remember the movie The Graduate, but when Dustin Hoffman was at that party and the guy comes up to him and says one word, plastics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that word is a word that toxicologists and researchers and epidemiologists are taking very seriously because it's leading to a lot of human exposure to things that are affecting our fertility.
One of the many things that I really enjoyed about your book is that you not only give information, and there's one thing, let's just touch on lead a little bit, because
sure,
this is something I feel most people are aware of, but you give such wonderful illustrations about how people who buy older homes, especially prior to the 1980s.
Right.
And I would say, what is it, between about 1980 to 1985, prior to that period, lead was still used in a lot of paints, etc. Well, you have people that are really, really fond of Victorian homes, these older homes, where the paints and the other things that were used at the time, and nobody really knew it then,
right,
but we know today, they are highly toxic,
yeah,
and especially in the dust. And you have a wonderful illustration of a woman who, she and her husband bought an older home, and her baby, she wasn't aware that her baby was being exposed to levels of toxin, and
right,
the fact that there was this substance that was on the walls and on the windowsill,
yes,
that pulverizes into a dust. How many of us even give that a consideration? We don't.
Well, Donna, there are still 300,000 children in this country. After all the public health efforts to reduce lead levels in things like gasoline, we've gotten it out of gasoline, and you can't buy paint with it anymore. Why do we still have 300,000 little children in this country who are lead contaminated to the point where their brains aren't functioning properly? Why do we have that many children? And the answer primarily is because of lead paint that's still in homes built before 1978. Yes, there's some lead in toys coming in from China. Yes, there's lead in lipstick, and moms kissing children could be contaminating them with lead. There is lead, but the major source is lead-contaminated paint in older homes. And windows, we point out windows as being
mm-hmm.
a major source because, you know, even if it's, even if the lead is, the layer of paint with lead in it is beneath three or four other layers of fresher paint, fresher coats, it's still going to flake and chip off, especially surfaces that get a lot of wear and tear and friction and weathering, and that's what windows are all about. So I actually recommend in an older home to bite the bullet and get the replacement windows, because it's not only good for the environment, you know, your carbon footprint goes down, but your lead exposure goes down because you get rid of all of that molding and the old wood, painted wood, and all the friction that goes along with it that spreads lead throughout the whole house from the windows. Because when that dust and those chips get generated, the wind blows it through the whole house and contaminates the floor, and little hands crawling around on floors are just going to pick it up and get it absorbed into their body.
Now, there is a way of removing lead from the body. Explain what that is.
Well, it's called chelation therapy, and there are several different chelators that can remove it from the blood, but that is really more of a high dose. When children are up around 40 or 50 micrograms per deciliter, those kinds of levels, which are, you know, are causing immediate brain damage, and we don't recommend chelation at levels that are more common in today's children. I mean, most children, of those 300,000 I talked about, most children are going to be in the range of 10 or 15 micrograms per deciliter, which is mildly elevated, still enough to maybe put a drag on learning and IQ, still enough to maybe create some attention deficit disorder, but not enough to cause the major effects, even life-threatening effects, that usually reserve for chelation therapy. Because chelation therapy does have some side effects, and it's not always that effective, because, Donna, you have to realize that a lot of the lead you have is tied up in your bones. Mm-hmm. Lead follows calcium around the body. And so it's going to be in bone. And so if you use a chelator, you're going to scrub the blood, but then it can just come right back out of the bone. So the most effective treatment is really to isolate the child from the lead environment, get them into a cleaner environment, let the body normally clear the lead, unless the level is so high that you really need to take immediate steps. But that's the bottom line. Is chelation is really not recommended for the average lead case, but for the more highly exposed child.
Now let's talk about radon. We, every once in a while...
Don, if I could just say one thing about lead in terms of those two examples we have in the book, the stories. There is the example of the child who has high lead levels and the home environment doesn't have elevated lead in the paint or in the plumbing and in the drinking water is fine. And it dawned on the doctor as he was interviewing the mom with this child sitting there having high lead levels that the child was spending half a day at a daycare center, which was in an older home and mm-hmm. wasn't fully licensed and hadn't been checked out. And so your child is at risk in any environment that they're spending significant amounts of time if there is lead in that environment.
Very good point. And again, for those of you who are just tuning in, I'm talking with Dr. Gary Ginsberg. The book we're discussing, which I feel should be in everyone's library, What's Toxic, What's Not. This is not paranoia. This is research. This is study. This is after a lot of years with the latest technology of being able to make evaluations, and it doesn't give all the answers, but it sure as heck puts us a lot further ahead than where we were. Let's talk about radon.
Sure.
I got a lot of education when I was reading your material because you have a story in here about Stanley Watrous.
Yeah.
And that was amazing to me how radon was discovered. Share that with my audience.
Oh, of course, yeah. Well, Stanley Watrous lived in Pennsylvania, and he worked at the TMI plant, Three Mile Island. And one day he went to work, and he happened to go in the wrong door. He went in the exit door for whatever reason, and he set off all the alarms. And this, the alarms are there on the exit door so that you don't take radiation home and with you. Your clothes aren't radioactive from working at TMI. Your car and home don't get radioactive. But he set off the alarms on his way in. And that, they checked out his car, they followed him around, and then they went to his house, and they, with a Geiger counter, and they found out how radioactive his house was. And so they thought, well, maybe Stanley brought some things from workplace home. But no, it wasn't from that. They found that it was a radioactive gas in his home called radon. And they found it not only in his home, but throughout his neighborhood. And he happened to be living in a geologic formation called the Redding Prong, Redding, PA, the Redding Prong, which is very high in granite and high in uranium and releases, from uranium and bedrock, it releases radon as a gas into the soil. And that gas gets swept up into your home by the action of your furnace. As it heats the home, it actually breathes on the soil gas, pulling soil gases into your house, and if there's radon in that soil gas, well, then you've got a radon problem in your house. He had huge levels of radon in his house. He was at a huge radon cancer risk. Radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer in this country.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
Now, here he was living. His house was more dangerous than his working environment. And who would have known?
Since when he was at work, he would have worn protective equipment.
Right. So here you are, here he is living in a natural environment that produced this soil gas.
Correct.
You also talk about an exposure to radon via drinking water.
Yes.
How does that happen?
Well, just like the soil gas can become contaminated by your radon underground, radon can dissolve into water, and so it can get into an aquifer, which is the water underneath your house. And so when you plumb that up into your bathroom and kitchen, that dissolved radon could be in your water. And so you could end up drinking radon. The major concern, though, is the radon that actually, since it is a gas at room temperature, it tends to volatilize in your house or evaporate out of the water and end up in your breathing space. So it's another way to bring radon into your indoor air is through your tap water.
That's incredible. Now, one other point that I think is very good about your book is that you list websites. In your material, you have checklists. You talk about kits. For example, people can go to their local hardware store, and there's a do-it-yourself test kit.
Right.
Regarding radon. And
yeah, well, that's the good news, Donna, with radon and things like lead, is that there are solutions. There are ways to test for it. The radon test kit costs about $20. You send it off to a lab, you get a result in a couple of days, and it only takes 2 days to test your house for it. And then there's a fix. If you have a radon problem, you don't have to demolish your house. It's not like you're never going to be able to sell your house. You can safeguard yourself and safeguard your property value by putting in about a $2,000 fix.
A big topic today, very, very big, is the controversy regarding food toxics. I mean, you have a chapter that is dedicated to this extensively, which I thought was very eye-opening.
Well, Donna, we could have had a whole book dedicated to food toxicology.
Absolutely.
But, you know, we just kept it under control for this edition of the book. But, you know, it merits its own book.
And you talk about pesticides that are being used,
right.
And you go into so many points of information, which I think is so informative, because you make a point that if you have a plant growing in a ground and there's concentration of pesticides, it is going to go into the meat of the vegetable itself, perhaps. And sometimes it's going to be just in the skin.
Right.
And there are all of these variables. And I have a friend who is involved in physics and in various aspects of microbiology, and he said, a certain vegetable, I don't remember which one it was, is that when it interacts with a particular component in fertilizer, it actually makes more nutrition in the vegetable itself than it would without it. And he said, chemistry is absolutely fascinating. And I thought, good Lord, there is so much we just don't understand. We just don't know. And that's something that you bring to the forefront. You say the number of pesticides we ingest in a single meal, whether it's fruits, vegetables, is really a lot higher than our ancestors ever had.
Yeah, well, the story with, especially with fruits, it's hard to grow a peach without treating it with about 5 or 10 different pesticides, because they tend to get rot and mildew, and so farmers use a lot of pesticides on those kinds of delicate fruits. But even your average apple, your average cucumber, there could still be 4 or 5 different pesticides that have residue levels on the fruit and on the vegetables. And so you're really eating a pesticide soup when you are bringing this stuff home, unless you're buying organic, certified organic produce. But we also make the point that the levels tend to be quite low, because there is a fair bit of testing that is put on this, and there are holding times, so that when a farmer applies the pesticide, he can't pick the fruit or the vegetable for usually 15 to 30 days afterwards. So that gives it, you know, with modern pesticides, they break down pretty fast, so that gives it some time to degrade and not be there anymore, or not be nearly as high a level. Where the levels tend to be highest is in the skin of the vegetable or in the root of the, and in the root vegetables. So your potatoes, your onions, your carrots will tend to have higher concentrations because they're grown in the soil. They're intimate with the soil. So peeling those vegetables, trying to buy organic. If you're going to buy organic, I would, and you're trying to save on your budget, you know, buy the organic root crops, because that's where the pesticides tend to be the highest, is in the root crops.
All right. You also bring out a point about washing produce, and I thought this was quite an interesting perspective. You say it doesn't hurt to wash your vegetables, but most produce, American produce, is pre-washed to get cleaned up for market, and because pesticides are systemic, meaning they're taken up into the peel or the edible portion of the vegetable's fruit,
exactly.
No amount of washing will remove them.
Yeah, I mean, you can do a little bit more with washing, but it's really not worth spending extra time and extra kinds of cleaning solutions to make you feel good. If you want to do that, fine, but that's not really where it's at. I mean, it's either you have a basic choice between buying certified organic food and paying the premium price, or not, and just trying to eat a diversity of foods. That you're not concentrating your diet in any one area and getting a lot of one kind of pesticide. So our take in the book is that we have a bigger concern about household use of pesticides than about what's in our diet, because that, on average, that dwarfs the amount of exposure. When you use pesticides on your lawn with that lawn company, when you apply them around your house to kill ants or cockroaches or whatever, or bees or insects or whatever, spiders, people do. Now, those treatments stay in the house for a long period of time, weeks, even months. And little children, because these pesticides tend to glom onto carpeting, glom onto plush toys, and it's little kids that are getting the biggest exposure. So I think eating organic is great. I think that is a way to cut down on our pesticide exposure. But the biggest source of exposure for your average person tends to be what we spray ourselves or have sprayed around our house.
That is so true. And I know that our time is becoming short, but I know personally a family who was literally poisoned because they had a problem with some kind of a bug infestation.
Right.
And the exterminator came out not once, but more than once.
Yep.
And the last one that came out sprayed everything, the pillows, the mattresses.
Yeah.
I mean, they just saturated their house. The house was labeled as toxic.
Yeah.
And what was horrifying about their story, they eventually moved out of it. They got violently, violently ill. They still are suffering from it years later.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened is that the house was supposed to have been destroyed. It was merely cleaned up and resold to another family without disclosure, which is horrifying.
Yeah, that is horrifying.
When you think of it, because many of those poisons will not break down for years.
Yeah.
They won't break down for years. And we have had personal experience with animals and things that we didn't have a clue about that were so toxic. It just is incredible.
Yeah. I mean, people are really stumbling around with using household pesticides, and it's really a toxic accident waiting to happen.
Yes. And we forget that the particles are airborne.
Right.
And I liked your suggestion about not using the sprays.
Yeah.
But you have some wonderful, wonderful recommendations like boric acid. If people have a problem with ants, if this doesn't harm people, it's not going to hurt animals, but it'll kill the ants. And
right.
There's other things that you can use that are not going to create a poisonous environment. And, of course, if you have animals, which are low to the ground, most of them,
yeah.
And then you have babies that are crawling around, all of this is so important.
Absolutely. Those are the main targets and receptors. And there have been studies done. The University of Purdue University did a study showing dogs getting more bladder cancer living in yards and in homes where the owners use lawn chemicals and the trucks that come to treat the lawns. So there is a cause and effect between household use of pesticides and actually causing cancer in your pets, and likely also affecting your own health and the health, certainly, of your children.
Oh, without question. Well, I'll tell you, we could talk for hours, and I know my audience is fascinated with this, as I have been. And what I would say to any and all of you, please educate yourself. This is so important because it boils down to our positioning of personal responsibility. If we don't question, if we don't educate ourselves, can we blame anybody else but us when we're not willing to learn?
And also think positive. There are ways to safeguard yourself.
Absolutely, and that's one of the many points that I found so outstanding about your book. It was you're giving information and then say, look, this is what you can do. This is what we're aware of. We don't have all the answers, but you do have options to work with.
Right.
And
can I mention my website, Donna?
Oh, please do.
Yeah, it's www.whatstoxic.com. No apostrophe, whatstoxic.com. You can find out more about the book. We also have a home toxics test, self-prompted, interactive, you can take and see what issues you have at your house.
Oh, that is absolutely awesome. What's Toxic.com. Dr. Gary Ginsberg has been my guest today. What's toxic? What's not? A must read. Educate yourself. It's worth it. Get it off the shelf. Read it. Share it with your family and with your friends. You'll be very glad you did, because you're going to make a difference by being informed. Dr. Ginsberg, thank you so much for being my guest.
Oh, this has been totally my pleasure.
This is Donna Sebo. We are going to take a break for just a moment, and I've got more good things to share with you. Don't go away now. We're going to come back in just a moment.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website. Go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Well, telephone lines are now open, and if you would like to chat with me today, I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here are the telephone numbers you can call in to, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. I wanted to share something with you because my guest today, Dr. Ginsberg, was and is a very knowledgeable man. He's a toxicologist. This is something that means a lot to him because he knows that the work that he's doing along with his colleagues, it is making a difference. And without investigation, we cannot find out about these things. I wanted to share some information with you that comes from my own personal experience. I mentioned this one family that I knew that were poisoned by exterminators that really did not know what they were doing. But let me share with you again my particular story. This goes back, maybe about 20 years ago. And in our home, we were having a major problem because there had been a decision that we were all going to be put on sewer. Where we were living, or where we are living at the time, was basically considered out in the country. So you had a septic system. Well, the city decided everybody has to be on a main sewer line. Well, because we have so many trees, and the area at the time was basically undeveloped, there were a few houses, including ours, when they put in the sewers, there was little thought given to the fact that you're disrupting the homes of all the creatures that are around in the forest. So everybody that had a home was invaded by a massive amount of rats, all kinds of different insects, which we lived with quite comfortably for a few years ourselves. We had no problems with any of them. But once that went on, it disrupted the entire ecological living environment of many different creatures. So what do? They're going to try to find a new home. Well, it's not fun when you have families of Norwegian rats, which are huge, move into your house and are underneath your home, and you find that they burrow these tunnels and they come in, and so we had to have an exterminator out. Now, this was, again, about 20 years ago. So unknown to us, and we knew that there were certain kinds of poisons that they used, and they were put, the poisons were put in containers, and, of course, the exterminators would come out and pick up the dead carcasses and tote them off, and that's all we knew. Well, I can recall having the exterminator out. We'd have them out like once a month, and they would say, this is what we do. We'll come out. We will spray around the base of your house. You won't have problems with spiders. You won't have problems with ants and all this kind of stuff. Well, that made us feel good because here in the Pacific Northwest, spiders just come out like you wouldn't believe, and you have all kinds of critters. Well, we did that on a regular basis. There was this one exterminator that came out, and I noticed him handling the poisons, which I knew they were poisons, but he wasn't wearing any protective garb, and I asked him why. I said, aren't you concerned about contamination? And he said, yeah, it's no big deal. Well, this fellow kept coming out once a month, and we just did it. We weren't too concerned about anything because we had been assured that this was not going to harm anything at all. This was something that you sprayed it around the base of the house, and you sprayed trees, and you did all of this stuff, but it wasn't going to hurt anything because after a few hours, it was okay. Well, we sort of bought into the story. And one day I was talking with this exterminator, and it was a very, very warm day. And he had to take care of something for us. He said, you know, I'm going to need to get in underneath your house. And I said, well, what are you going to do? And he said, I'm going to spray a certain area, but don't worry about it. And I said, okay, I've got animals. I'm going to keep them inside, but I'll open up the windows because I was concerned about some fumes coming up. And he said, oh, you don't need to be too concerned about that. Well, because of what he was doing, we had a chance to do a little bit more chatting than normal. I found that this guy had come out to the West Coast. He originally was from the East Coast. And he said when he was on the East Coast, temperatures weren't all that warm. But when he was driving out, and he's been in the extermination business at that time for a number of years, for about 15 years, he happened to go through a desert area. And he said it was so warm that when I was in my vehicle, he said my air conditioner became disruptive and wasn't operating. And he said I was perspiring so heavily, I could smell the poisons coming out of my skin in his perspiration. He could smell it. And that set off some red flags in my mind. I said, doesn't that bother you? He said, no. I said, you're perspiring and you can smell the poisons that you have sprayed as an exterminator. Don't you think you ought to be tested for something like this or checked out? He said, no. Now, this is a man who would not use protective garb. He said, I know it's in my system, and I know that this is how it's coming out of it, is through the perspiration. Well, that really concerned me. And I couldn't get too much information from anyone regarding these poisons. I really didn't know 20 years ago the right kinds of questions to ask for who to go to. There wasn't a toxicologist that I knew. Well, months went by, and the following year, we had a young woman that was coming out, and she was petite, and she was handling the poisons. We had a wonderful rapport, and we had a chance to chat. And what happened was she told me, and she made a point of wearing the protective clothing. Now, the protective clothing that they had was made of cotton. And cotton is very porous, obviously. It's a natural fiber, and it breathes. So she put on the mask, which was just one of these simple paper masks like you get at the hardware store for dust. And then she put on gloves, and she put on the entire outfit. Now, she had gone to school, she had gotten training in how to handle these chemicals provided by the company she was working for. She went through all of this. Now, she must have been about 5'2". She was very trim. She weighed maybe 105 to 110 pounds max. Tiny, tiny little gal. So I said to her, does it bother you that you are working with these chemicals? And I told her about this fellow that had been at the house and what had happened to him. She said, well, we're educated on this, and we've been told that this does not harm us. Months went by, and she ended up not coming. Well, as it turned out, we decided, the more we learned, we decided it wasn't worth our using these toxic chemicals. Also, we found that a number of the people that were handling the materials, were very careless. They were spraying it on the yard. They were doing all kinds of things that just didn't make sense to me. And I had pets. I had animals that I was concerned that were going to be exposed to this. So we ended up making a choice about stopping it altogether. Before we did that, I had a conversation with this young woman that had been coming to our home. When I called it extermination company, and I said, I want to know about so-and-so. Lo and behold, I was talking to this lady, and I said, oh my goodness, I how are you doing? She said, well, I'm not doing very well. And I asked her what was going on, and she said, well, no one's in the office, so I can tell you, Mrs. Siebel. She said, I was out there in the field working, and I was using all the precautions. About 3 months after I started doing the work, I became violently ill. And it was found that I had very toxic levels of poison that was in my system. And with all of the protective garb, I was still inhaling it. And it affected me. Well, she was so small, she didn't have much body weight, that the effect on her was very strong, very intense, and so she shifted to an inside job. And I said, is anyone paying attention to this? And she said, no, not really. And I said, well, take care of yourself. Now, who knows, 20 years later, what physiological condition she's in at this time. We have had a couple of animals that we've loved dearly affected by this very thing. And we realized, and it was a few years later, that due to our own ignorance, we exposed not just our animals, but to ourselves, a high level of toxicity because, again, of our ignorance. So I encourage you to really think. There are times when we have to do certain things to take care of, you know, particularly negative situations that can be very, very bad. So there are points of information, though, that we need to educate ourselves on. And I don't blame the exterminators. I don't blame anybody because it's long after the effect. But I'm educated now. So if I choose to put that kind of poison into my environment, I'm responsible for it. I am the one that's making the choice. I don't do that anymore. I'm very thoughtful, too, about the products I use in my home. Why? Because there are fumes, there are different things that you are brought in contact with, and you don't realize that you can inhale them, and they go into your lungs. So I really think whatever you can do to educate yourself, don't just do it because I say it. I'm asking you, open your mind and your attitudes. Realize that what is in our environment, if it's not a good thing in our environment, it's going to come around and affect us in one way or another. If we poison our environment, we are going to poison ourselves. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227 is the telephone number for the U.S. If you're a new listener, I'm so delighted you're part of our listening family now here at the Donna Sebo Show. Also, for those of you in Canada, 888-815-9756. All I need from you is your first name or your initial, and after that, just let me do my thing. And we're taking a break in just a moment. We are going to be right back. Don't you go away.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. The toll-free number is 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756 or 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. We've got a wonderful lineup of guests that are coming up. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with Garrett Sutton, the ABCs of Writing Winning Business Plans. Now, what makes this so valuable? If you're a person that's thinking of going into business, or maybe you're trying to raise funds for an existing business, you're going to probably have to have a business plan. You can always hire someone to do this for you if you're uncomfortable with it. But don't you think it'd be a good idea to be educated about this so that you yourself would have a better understanding if you did go to someone else about what would be required and what would be needed? So Garrett Sutton, this is his business. This is what he's been involved with for years. This book is absolutely marvelous. Next week, we have a great lineup. Oh, if you love honeybees, which I just think they are one of the most fascinating creatures on this planet, Steve Buchanan is going to be my guest on Monday. We're going to be talking about the bee tree. And then on Tuesday of next week, Ed Bowen is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about the greatest Kentucky Derby upsets. Yes, my show is eclectic, and we talk about all kinds of things. And why not the Kentucky Derby? The stories are amazing about these fabulous, fabulous thoroughbreds. Then we're going to be talking with Lisa Johnson. If you recall, she was with me yesterday. We're going to be talking about Winter's Eve and Christmas Eve. We weren't able to go into all of the material yesterday, so we're going to be doing it again next week. This is great information on children's material. This couple have just done a wonderful job. So we're going to be talking about that. And then we're going to be talking with Katie Bannister. This is a woman that's a paraplegic, and she has written a book called A Personal Care Attendant Guide. So often when we hear about this subject matter, we hear about it from the positioning of someone trying to find a caretaker. Well, we'll hear a little bit about that, but we're going to be hearing the story and the recommendations from a woman who lives this every day. So she's going to be just wonderful to talk to. And then Betty Young is a woman that believes in teaching children how to care. And that's what her publication is all about, teaching kids to care. And children are like little sponges. If they are not aware, if they're not taught certain things, they're not necessarily just going to automatically know how to be. It's like good manners. If you're not taught, you may go around eating like something that came out of, you know, I don't know what. And people say, oh, how gross, this person never learned. Well, you have to teach, don't you? Kids watch what's around them, and they learn from observation. And also, if nobody is willing to train them, then they'll just implement whatever works. So that and some other wonderful, wonderful guests are going to be coming on the Donna Sebo Show. So I invite you to check bbsradio.com for the listing of programmings that are coming up for the month of November. They're all in place. And also, I'm going to be putting out my newsletter, and I'll have the listing of guests all there, right there in front of you. So if you want to get an email newsletter, all you need to do is send an email to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. Give me your email address, and I'll pop it on. Otherwise, we'll have it up as soon as I get my newsletter to my webmaster, which will be today. She'll have it up probably within 48 hours on my website. Remember, you can always go in and peruse my website, DelphiInternational.com. You're welcome to read any of the newsletters that are archived. Feel free to do that. There's information on my calendar and other good things that are coming up. Now, I wanted to talk about how you can be happier. And there's all kinds of little suggestions that we can utilize to make ourselves feel better. Let's face it, we're coming into the darker days. Oh, don't forget, this weekend, daylight savings time ends. So don't forget to turn your clocks back. Of course, time changes about 2 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. But remember, you're going to have an extra hour of sleep. Yahoo! And on a Sunday, that's a good thing. Now, if you really want to feel better about life, especially as we go into winter months, so many times people get so depressed. They will look at what's around them and go, I don't know why I'm so draggy. I feel so depressed, this, that, or the other. Well, often, if you will look at your lighting and you replace whatever you have in the way of bulbs with some full-spectrum lighting, that can make a big, big difference on your everyday environment. It's just a shift in the rays of light that are being emitted from that bulb. So full-spectrum lighting is a thing you can use. Also, why not just have an attitude of gratitude about your day? Make a point of consciously putting your mind where you want it to be and really take the time to look at what you should be grateful for in your environment. If you find yourself getting into that grumbly, you know, sort of down-in-the-mouth attitude, shift. Say, wait a minute. What am I doing with my mind? What am I doing with my attitudes? And, you know, sometimes when we go into the longer hours of darkness, we find that we have a different level of fatigue that might hit us. So maybe just take a nap. Maybe that'll work for you. But remember, too, to interact with people. When you interact and connect with people, and maybe, let's say, if you're at work, instead of eating by yourself and just having a sandwich at your computer, get up, leave your work environment. If you're at home, if you've got a business at home, leave your working environment. Go someplace and really get into either chatting with someone or doing something different. Take your dog or your cat or your bird, whatever you want to do, for a walk. Get yourself outside. Move. Get into gear. Also, share favorite moments with people or with yourself. Say, what are some of the most wonderful things I could ever have had happen to me? And go sort of down that positive memory lane replay in your mind. That can make a difference. And if you're feeling sort of down in the dumps, what can you do for someone else that maybe will make a difference? Maybe you need to clean out some of the stuff in your house. Maybe you got old clothes, or maybe you want to do some volunteer work somewhere. Get yourself out and realize that life is something you need to participate in. You don't run away from it. You participate in it. And it's okay. It's a good thing to do. Me, my favorite thing when I'm sort of feeling down in the dumps or in a slump is to get outside, even if the temps are really, really cold. Sometimes just getting outside and going somewhere. I had a very good friend, you know, a few years back who was in her 80s, and she said one of the most uplifting things for me if I'm in the doldrums is to go to the grocery store. And I sort of looked at her oddly, and she goes, no, I'm serious. She said, I go into the grocery store, and I'm all of a sudden looking at all kinds of things. And I'm exploring the shelves, and I'm looking at all kinds of different products that are being introduced. I check out magazines. I said, that's amazing. She said, it works for me. Get out. Go to the mall. Go to your local library. Read some new material. You know, happiness is a do-it-yourself job. Nothing outside of you really is going to make you happy inside unless you make it okay for you to be in that happy space. Happiness is a self-generated phenomena. It's how we think and how we respond to life as it goes on around us. We're out of time here. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Stevo. It is so important that you are educated about what is going to make your life more healthy, more successful, and more empowering to you as an individual. Thank you for sharing this hour with me. Tell your friends. Talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
Powerless to your obvious doubt. once you fall in love, you can never get out. I want now of a million things.
Have you ever wondered about miracles? Would you like to have your spirit uplifted by inspiring stories of the miraculous in everyday life? Expect Miracles does just that. Author Mary Ellen Angel Scribe shares a wonderful compilation of 70 gentle-hearted, true miracle stories sent to her by readers of her Miracles and Good News letter. A Christmas filled with miracles is also the result of people sharing miracles that have found their way into their lives. These inspirational and touching books are available now at angelscribe.com for just $15 plus shipping and will be personally autographed by Mary Ellen Angel Scribe. Expect miracles, and A Christmas filled with miracles make wonderful gifts and will open your eyes to the possibility that miracles do happen. Expect miracles at angelscribe.com.
Oh, hello. This is Mary Ellen Angel Scribe, welcoming you to another hour of Metaphysical Straight Talk from the Heart. The Tirith program is dedicated to teaching us about the unseen world of spirit and angels and how they interplay in our lives. Excuse me. This week, Atira is not on the continental USA. Can you believe this? She's in Hawaii. It's her first time there. I'm not the least bit jealous. Oh, yeah? As much as we all know she deserves the rest, we would love to be smelling the Hawaiian flowers, munching pineapples, and macadamia nuts with her. We phone each other each day, and yesterday at the exact same minute, she dialed me in Oregon while I was dialing her in Hawaii, and both of our lines were busy. So it shows you, even though you can be thousands of miles away and off-continent, you are psychically connected within your spirit. And pay attention to little things like this. It's always fun to guess who it is before you pick up the telephone, too. Now, Atira is loving this first time in Hawaii. The sun, the people. And this Sunday, she's actually found a spiritualist church that she's going to be attending, so she'll be sharing that information with us next week. And I am sure Atira is seeking out new spiritual experiences in Hawaii, besides enjoying that 88-degree temperature. The last time I talked to her, she was under a shady tree on the beach, relaxing, reading a spiritual book. Ah, Hawaii. If you haven't been there, it's the place to go. And check on the internet for cheap tickets. That's how she ended up getting there. She got a really good deal on a ticket. So I'd like to ask, is our guest on the radio yet?
No, but I'm on the telephone.
Oh, that'll work. So you're on the radio too. Hang on, John. So we were having a little trouble connecting there at the beginning. So dearest readers, today, please not phone in to ask for a psychic reading. You won't be getting one. I could give you one, but as you know, it would be all make-believe and drive you nuts trying to figure it out. And that's not what John does either. He's a real special guest. Neither of us are a psychic or a medium like Atira, which is a big darn in our lives. Now, as a way to introduce myself, I'm lucky enough to be Atira's best friend. But that's a magical journey in itself. I'm a photojournalist and an international author of both Expect Miracles and A Christmas Filled with Miracles. And I have a newspaper column on pet tips and tales. So you can check them out on the website for information on how to sign up for the pet tips and the angel newsletters on angelscribe.com. That's A-N-G-E-L-S-C-R-I-B-E. Now, Pet Tips and Tales is a year old, and Angel Scribe newsletters are 11 years old. Through these free online newsletters, it's my intention to uplift hearts around the world and strengthen their beliefs, whatever they are. One is to let folks know that angels are indeed real. And the Pets Column's intention is to educate the next generation of pet guardians on how to best take care of their animals. Both newsletters are intended to be life-changing, filled with stories that make people think, laugh, and learn. We all have choices, and these newsletters are my chosen volunteer act of kindness to the world, and definitely one of the vehicles that angels are using as they teach and uplift us. Now, today's guest is going to reveal some secrets of the publishing business, how he got into it, how it ticks, and why he chose the genre of books. Now, please check out John Thompson's publishing business, Illumination Arts, at their website. It's illumin.com, illumin.com. Now, when you go to his website, you'll notice the list of books. But the one thing you'll notice is the awards. The awards on his website attest to the power of his books for their readers. And he has very special readers, as John specializes in spiritual children books. Now, not many people realize this, but as an author, I'd like to share with you that publishers usually have one kind of book that they prefer. Now, you wouldn't send a manuscript of poetry to John because he's a publisher of children's books, and John wouldn't take a second look at my book because it's not a child's book. He goes specifically for children's stories. And authors can save a lot of heartache by researching their publishers before sending out heavy manuscripts to be quickly rejected. Now, today's guest, author and publisher John Thompson, and I've known each other for 9 years. When I first published Expect Miracles, we met at a book expo in Denver. Oh, there is such a fun place to go. I was promoting my book, and John was promoting his publishing company's selection of books. One new one at that time was Cassandra's Angels. Welcome, John. This is your hour to teach the listeners first. Where are you? And tell them where you're calling from today.
Well, I'm sitting on the floor, but I've got a pillow at the Merchandise Mart in Denver.
Being famous is so classy, isn't it?
I wanted to. Well, you said you wanted to interview me, and I thought it'd be so cool if I could return to the same scene where we met 9 years ago to do the interview.
That's right.
And then coincidentally, I'm attending the Colorado Country Christmas show here this weekend, and I'm in the process of setting up our booth.
Mm-hmm. And how many people are expected at the expo?
Well, depending on weather, et cetera, and whether they're playing games, I'm hoping they at least get 50,000 here.
Yeah, it's amazing. People have no idea at those expos the number of people that come through, and it's great for a publisher like yourself to show your work off to different businesses that have never heard of you.
Well, more important here, it's the people. We have a really good, we offer them a good special price, and it's so I think it's more just meeting all the different people who might not have seen our books in various stores.
So is this expo open to the general public?
Definitely. It's at the Merchandise Mart. It's off I-25. You just go north of I-70 in Denver and then exit at 58th Street.
It's huge.
Oh,
it's huge.
Tons of different shops here.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we're going to do a special for four or five different shows for people who hear about it on this little broadcast. I won't say little, but because we're doing this show, we're also doing Wordstock in Portland, the 10th and 11th of November. We'll be doing the Salt Lake City Christmas show November 9th through 11th.
But your books are the perfect gift for a child any time of the year. Even when a child's sick, any of your books are a wonderful gift. One of the things about them, even if they can't read, doesn't matter which book they pick up, the artwork is phenomenal. You can lose yourself in the pages of your books. The detail on every page is amazing.
Well, we've taken, once we got into publishing children's books, we made the decision just to find the very best artist for every single book. And so after we've painstakingly selected the book, then we go through an equal process of finding the perfect artist.
John, how many manuscripts are submitted to you every year?
Well, roughly 200 per month we receive. And each year, or these days, we're printing 2, 3, or 4 books.
Mm-hmm.
And then interestingly, we tend to find a lot of the books other than through the submissions. So it's an interesting challenge for people who have the desire to have a published children's book. And I'm sure that we probably don't, it's probably a little easier at some other publishers, but it's a difficult business both all the way around, really, but it's such a, it's almost like an addiction for many people that are in it.
What, to publish the books, you mean?
Well, just being in this business, knowing that as a book goes out to some family that, you know, the lives are changed, the parents who read the books, they're touched by the books, they often get into the schools.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I first saw your books on the shelves, I was so jealous. the quality of, this is before I was an author, I couldn't believe somebody could put out that quality. The stories are phenomenal. They're uplifting, they're inspiring, they teach children, but they teach adults, but they go right to the heart of the matter, and basically each book says in a quiet, gentle way, you're okay, you're okay. And then the artwork wraps around you like a warm, fuzzy blanket. It's sensational.
Nice, well, wait till you see our next book, God's Promise, is possibly going to be the best, most brilliant book we've ever published artistically. It's a wonderful story by Maureen Moss called God's Promise, and Gerald Purnell, who did one of our other multi-award-winning books called Am I Color 2, is the illustrator, and he's just finishing it. We won't have it till the last day of this year, but when people see it, they're going to flip out.
That's wonderful.
You know, Mary Ellen, you said something about don't submit poetry, but I'll say that about half of our books are poetry.
No, but I mean, a lot of people will just write daily poetry about lost keys or the pretty autumn leaves.
Good point.
Yeah, but your books are poetic, and that's what's fun about them. I know that you memorize a lot of your books. Do you have a couple lines you'd like to share with somebody from...
The first book we did is one called All I See Is Part of Me, and this is a good example of poetry. This is actually the energy of this book has probably kept our company in business all these years, just from the multiple places where energy flows. Here we go. All I see is part of me. I am part of all I see, and all I see is part of me. I am my hands, I am my feet. I am the puppy across the street. I am the moon, I am the stars. I'm even found in candy bars. I used to think that I was small, a little body, that was all. But then one day I asked the sun, who are you? You mean we are one. But Mr. Sun, how is this true? How could I be both me and you? He smiled. You might ask your sister Star. She too is part of who you are. And so I waited till the night when darkness let me see her light. Sister Star, how can it be that I am you and you are me? She glowed. You are larger than you know. You are every place there is to go. You have a body, this is true, but look what's inside of you. I closed my eyes to see within. I saw a light, it made me grin. It reminded me of Sister Star. She said, that light is who you are. Your body is just a little part of the light that shines within your heart. In all the world and all the space, your light shines bright, it's every place. And when you join it dot to dot, you'll see that you is what you've got. All the plants, the animals, and trees are in your light. And you are these. Look inside each one you meet and see your light. It's so complete. Inside, outside, below, above, see your light and feel its love. You're asking you when you ask me. So you know everything, don't you see? I closed my eyes and found my light dancing with moonbeams in the night. I said a prayer no one's heard because all I am hears every word. And I can see in all of me that there can be no end. So that's around 50% of that book.
Beautiful. And I'm very envious of that brain that can hold on to poetry.
Well, you know, we published that, as I say, our first published children's book. Before that, we'd done a wonderful adult book called The Death of the Prophet, which is the completion of Cahil Gibran's trilogy that started with The Prophet. And, you know, his Prophet is one of the most widely sold books in English ever. And he was working on the Garden of the Prophet when he died, and his editors put together the Garden of the Prophet. And it was okay, but it wasn't nearly as brilliant as the Prophet. But before he died, he wrote a letter to his brother-in-law, I believe, and stating that his trilogy would end with the death of the Prophet. He said the storyline would be, and he shall return unto the city of Orphalese, and they shall stone him unto death, and he will call every stone a sacred name. and that it would come after he died. And so in the early 70s, a man in Oregon started receiving this dictation, and it took him...
Was that Jason Lean?
Jason Lean, yeah. It took him several years to bring it through, and another company published it, and then we republished it with slight editing. And then shortly after that, John Lennon approached Jason right after he died and ended up for the next year giving Jason the details of all the processes he went through in his after-death process, including 13 new songs.
Oh, my.
One of the songs I can give you a few lines of.
We'd love to hear them.
It's called Lost in the Promised Land. I seen them standing like the prophets with their scriptures in their hands. I seen them try to judge the righteous, be they beast or be they man. I seen them take their small portion for the whole of God's great plan. But as long as we stand divided, we're lost in the promised land. Lost in the holy land, can't tell wrong from right. Unless we're lost in promised land, and we wouldn't know the Lord if we met him here tonight. I've heard them say that they're reborn, seeing the laying on of hands. I've heard them speak the ancient tongues that very few can understand. I've seen them sell the balm of love or the flames of fear they fan. But as long as we fear each other, we're lost in the promised land.
That's so powerful.
Lost in the holy land and blinded by the light, unless we're lost in holy land, and we wouldn't know the Lord if we met him here tonight. Now the earth was once a haven. Some say it shall be again, that the angels will come from heaven to speak for the sons of man. I pray those dreams are true and that we'll stand hand in hand. For as long as we stand divided, we're lost in the promised land.
That
are the angels coming, Mary? So that was our second book, and about that time, some friends of our company came by with these wonderful drawings and this amazing poem called All I See Is Part of Me, and said, well, you guys are doing metaphysical things. Why don't you publish our book, too? And not knowing anything about what you told the folks about niches, I said, oh,
okay.
Why not? Yeah, we'll do a map book next. And then we published All I See, and we decided the energy from that was so profound that we made the switch right then, within 6 months, and had decided to become a publisher of inspiring children's books.
Well, that's how it evolved?
Yeah.
I know that originally you were going to go down a different avenue, but something turned, or you had received a message, and that's why you decided to get into these books.
I was going to go down the avenue of actually making a profit at my business. I'm a tax accountant by training, and a CPA, and had worked for a national publishing or accounting firm called, in the old days, it was called Deloitte Haskins and Sells. It's now Touche Deloitte. And then I did a number of investment types things, and then insanity set upon me, and I became a children's book publisher. And I started heading in that direction in the early 80s, published a book about Sai Baba in 1985. And then, as I said, the two other books came in 3 years later, and then all of a sudden, by 1990, we found ourselves in this business of publishing children's books.
Traveling the world, flogging books at big events.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, the one thing, having seen you at several expos, is your table is never devoid of people. There's always people standing around. They're reading the books. I mean, I even walk up to people when I see them and I point out two or three books and tell them they've got to buy these books because they're so powerful, they're uplifting, they're inspiring. I mean,
well, be sure to come to the shows in Seattle and do that then.
Yeah.
Victorian Country Christmas is in Puyallup on the 28th of November through December 1st. And the Seattle Gift Show is November 16th through 18th.
Oh, so you're going to be so busy.
Can we count on you being there all 3 days of both shows? Mary Ellen, you're wonderful.
Oh, I believe in you.
What an angel.
Thank you.
It's a miracle.
Hey, Illumination Arts, the new logo you've got on top of your website of the little elf writing, he's actually scribing under the purple umbrella.
Oh, yeah.
Inspire the mind, touch the heart, uplift the spirit. It says it all. You just enter a magic kingdom in your books.
Well, we've got a brilliant young webmaster named Kelsey Maloney who was an intern with us last summer, a year ago, from Whitman. And we've hired her, and that's her design.
Oh, it's beautiful. So, in your books, what are the stories you hear about people who have read them? First, I want to mention, do you still carry the book Safe Touch?
Book, which one?
Safe Touch, is that your book?
No.
Oh, I think it was by Jody Bergsma.
No, we do. Well, we've done Jody from Washington State. We've done Jody Bergsma's, all of her books.
Yeah, I see, the Dream books and the Dragon books.
Here's one, a couple lines from one of Jody's beautiful books called Sky Castle. Let's build a great castle high up in the sky. We'll just close our eyes and let our thoughts fly to a whole new world of our own creation, full of hopes and dreams and imagination. Climb rainbow stairs to the top of the sky, shout hello to the earth and hear her reply. So in this wonderful book, we're building this great sky castle where everyone's welcome. There's room for whole oceans inside with mystical rainforests and tropical hues and all the animals and plants, animals coming from every direction. And everyone's getting along, everyone's welcome, friends from new lands. And then we get to the end, and when it last it encircles the whole world round, we'll bring our sky castle way down to the ground. We'll slide it on moonbeams with music and prayers and join as one family to celebrate there. Now plan your creation or dream in the sky. No castles are built by those who don't try. Anyway, that's Sky Castle.
Well, what I love about Sky Castle, she's intertwined the Celtic heart around most of the pages, and you just sit mesmerized looking at her artwork. I have to tell you, I've known Jody Bergsma for years, and we have her artwork throughout our house. We have just admired her. She was one of the first spiritual artists that was around, and through her business, she's hired other people. And I personally know somebody who went through high school with her, and they said that the children in high school mocked her for being different.
Really?
Well, yes. Now, Jody is this kind, absolutely beautiful, spiritual, gentlewoman. Wouldn't you agree there, John?
Oh, Jody is one of the greatest souls I know.
There you go.
Yeah,
and so they made fun of her because she was different or not normal.
Well,
and
she
yet,
decided every summer if she could just paint 1,000 paintings, that would get her through college. So when she discovered the magic of making prints instead of having to do all originals, she was seventh heaven.
And her artwork inspires you, and she has sayings down below them that are so wonderful. We had them in our daughter's room ever since she was young, so... I just love your artist and your selection. Can't say that enough.
I flew on Jody's artwork. Anytime you see the frog, the toad, that's her.
Oh.
She calls herself Jode the Toad. She never announces it, but she disclosed it. There's one of her wonderful books called The Little Wizard. And on the very first page of that book, do you have that one? If you do,
yes,
you'll be able to see in the left corner, there we've got the toad writing the book. And that's the only time, that's the only thing where Jody's ever even given a clue about her secret identity as the toad.
Oh, cute. Well, she's amazing. That's all I have to say. I wanted to say, though, that on your book, Little Squarehead, about a little girl who was taunted at school, and she retreats to the comfort of the animal friends in the woods, that's like what Jody did. Even though that she was being taunted, she still went ahead and used her gift, and then when she opened up her gift shop in Bellingham, Washington, she employed people. So what she did just exponentially grew in goodness, and it helped other people, and it inspired children for generations now.
Yes, she was named the top business person in Bellingham in 1995. I can't imagine. We didn't actually, in our high school, we didn't actually taunt the beautiful girls. We actually kind of worshipped them a bit. So I don't know what was going on at her high school, but...
Oh, I think it was probably her little fairy drawings and things like that.
Whatever.
But I bet everybody else is wishing that she was their best friend now. Anyway, so how can people send stories? I know we have some listeners today that are authors and artists. How would they submit something to not just you as a publisher, but to other publishers? What would you recommend?
Write an intriguing introduction letter. Putting your best foot forward as to how it can be marketed and how the author would partake in the marketing. But then if it's a child's book, like what we're doing is almost exclusively 32-page books, then get a hold of enough 32-page books so you can see how they're written, and then do the submission in that format. I'll give something that might not make sense to people who aren't writing books, but for example, if you're doing 32 pages, you might say, well, page one, title page. Then 2-3 would be the first full spread you see in an illustrated book. That'd be 2-3. Then write it that way. So what's on page 2-3? What words, what... And if you have distinct ideas of the art, that's something too. But because it's a different writing style, if you understand that you've turned another page to get to 4-5, so how you write that page could be totally different if you structure it that way compared with if you're just writing the whole thing down a single page without deciding where the page breaks are.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one clue, and then basically finding which publishers do publish, you know, the types of book that you see yours being.
Someone told me once that if you go to the library, just do what you're doing. Sit on the floor, start pulling out, in this case, children's books, and
yeah,
find a genre that you go, wait, that's similar to what I have or what
yeah,
you'd like to have published, and then contact those ones first. It'll save a lot of time.
Or another better way, I think, is going to, like, a large children's store, in our case, like Secret Garden in Seattle, or, say, the Stonehouse Bookstore in Kirkland has a lot of children's books, or Barnes & Noble or Borders, you know, any...
Mm-hmm.
And then, because really those are the ones that are being purchased today.
Oh, the updated
books. Just because
something
is a library,
mm-hmm,
you know, doesn't necessarily mean who's doing what today.
The publisher could be out of business.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So find whose books are there, because obviously those are the ones the bookstore is choosing to feature, so somehow they're favoring those publishers. And then really just spend enough time with the books to, and then you could write the letter, the proposal letter, with that in mind.
So even if they don't have an artist in mind, that's not a problem if they've got the text to the book.
I strongly suggest they don't get the artist.
Then their heart's not set on it if you choose another one?
Yeah, the problem is, I mean, I've seen some unfortunate circumstances where people had the whole thing illustrated. And then, like in our case, there have been a couple cases where we might have selected just the words, but didn't like the art at all. And it wasn't something where the artist could fix it, because we just didn't, that style wasn't what we were looking for.
Right. But, and your artwork is so over the top.
Well, that's what, you know, that's where we were very particular about it. In one case, it was a mother and daughter team, so we just, you know, politely declined the whole project. But if you, let's say that an artist like Jody Bergsma is highly interested in your book, then definitely mention that in the letter. Or if another artist who is really totally top quality is highly excited about the book and wants to do like one sample illustration, for example, that's very good.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do you find your artists?
Well, I get three or four art samples every day, and I actually don't keep most of them, and so we've got hundreds of artist samples built up, and so when we finally have selected a manuscript, we go through all of those, picking the artist that's the perfect for the project.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And life as a publisher isn't as easy. You don't just stay in your office in Bellevue, Washington, collecting, waiting for Loomis trucks to drive up and drop off money, hey?
Yeah, we've never had the big problem of having to scurry around looking for extra banks in order to deposit the CDs that we're putting
up. But you're out in the public and you're selling your books and you're seeing firsthand the people that are enjoying them, aren't you?
Well, it's fun. You know, I love my life. I'm over the next 12 months going to be doing close to 30 shows. Actually, maybe 27. My wife is very involved in the business in several different ways. She's a brilliant interior designer who's specializing in green design, but also has it in her company. It's called Spirit Path Design. But she also has a great eye for art and sees many, many things that no one else sees, and also helps me in a number of the shows.
Yes, I've seen her at the shows, too. She's very sweet.
Yeah. So it's And my mom, Ruth, is an amazing soul. At 90 years old, is still, I'd say, among a handful of the top children's book editors in the world. Sharp as a tack. Still, I have a group of editors that work with us, and she still usually has the most suggestions, or among at least one of the top two numbers of excellent suggestions for each project we do. And still plays bridge twice a week, does her crossword puzzles every day, and when she's not playing solitaire, she's assisting as an assistant teacher for one of her granddaughters, who's a teacher in a little town called Castle Rock.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so she's keeping busy.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about people who, I don't ever see retirement. I kind of wonder about that concept for me. But I know I'll never want to be sitting there wanting to watch TV, you know, hour after hour, or even golf.
And what I'm seeing with you is, what's the next project? Where can I run? What looks like fun? Because really, you are childlike. No wonder you're into children's books, because you can relate to each one of these books.
Well, stamina-wise, also, I'll pass on something to our wondrous readers, is that 13 years ago in Oklahoma City, in order to stay in the publishing business all these years, I've been managing apartments in Oklahoma City long distance. At one point, I managed up to 1,000 units in the early 90s, or by mid-96.
So you've struggled as a publisher because you believe in it.
Well, we finally made our first year, we made a profit last year after 19 years.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I was playing golf because I was coming here in those days, to Oklahoma City, 1 week every month, and playing golf, and the fellow started talking about kombucha mushroom tea.
Mm.
And he was a smoker, and all of a sudden his emphysema was going away, and then by the end of the summer, his hair is starting to change color. And then I saw it on television down here, Linda Cavanaugh, the Channel 4, the lady was interviewing two ladies in their 80s who'd been bedridden for years, and then they're out in their gardens with mushroom after drinking mushroom tea. Well, I got my first kombucha mushroom then in October, and I've been drinking it ever since. And over 13 years, I've had 2 days off. And basically, people drinking this tea never get sick.
Well, I've met you, and you told me about it. And we were shocked at your age and your energy because it's not like other people the same. 30 shows, that means you've got to fly to an area, set up a lot of books, talk like crazy for how many hours a day?
Oh, yeah, and I'm doing mostly shows alone, so
mm-hmm.
I don't go from 10, like I just did one 5 days, 10 till 9.
Mm-hmm.
But the other part of this kombucha mushroom, I'll get off that little topic, but people never get cancer if they're doing that. They can either buy it at a place like Whole Foods or someplace, or else they can make it themselves. And by going online, you go kombucha, mushroom.
Could you spell that again, please, for the listeners to research?
Kombucha, kombucha, mushroom. You can find out how to get a hold of a mushroom and start making them yourself.
Mm-hmm. Always the teacher, John.
Well, you know, stuff that works. Here my cholesterol came down by 100 points within the first 6 months. I was at 305. I got down to the low 200s. After I was on it 6 months, my hair cutter asked if I was dyeing my hair.
Wonderful.
So from the time I was 50 to 63, I've got about the same amount of gray hair.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Anyhow,
that's
publishing
interesting.
Is fun, definitely. I don't want to discourage
people. But it's stressful. But it also shows it too, that publishing a book, both for the, unless you're, what is it, Ms. Rollins with her wizard book.
Oh, yeah.
J.K. Rollins. Most people are using it as a tool. Like with my books, Expect Miracles and A Christmas Filled with Miracles, which I know you have both copies,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
you love to gift them to your friends. It's a tool to get the words out. It's a tool to teach. And each one of your books is a teaching book. Isn't that the underlying intention?
Well, for example, our upcoming author, Maureen Moss, she's got two beautiful adult books, Commitment to Love. Oh, I can't remember the other one, but it's also a wonderful book.
She's from Oregon, too, isn't she?
Yes, she lives in southern Oregon and also is the steward of the World Puja Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
They're having an event in Seattle November 3rd at the Unity Church in Seattle It's a 9-hour event, a wonderful event. Among the other presenters will be Jay-Z Knight. I'll be in another show, so I'll have to miss that, but it's going to be quite spectacular, I'm sure.
But what's the date of that? I know Tara wants to go.
November 3rd.
Thank you.
Seattle at the Unity Church.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Oh. Well, I need to insert a commercial for Tara.
Go for it.
And while I'm doing that, you think of something else exciting that you can share, a secret on the publishing business.
Okay, good.
Now, Atira's readings are $100, and they're 45 minutes, and they're literally blow-your-socks-off readings. And you can find the information on her website, which we share. It's angelscribe, angelscribe.com. And her readings are interesting. I call her a soul healer, John, because she just doesn't say, you know, I see you passing your exam. She speaks to your heart. She motivates you. And if there's some sort of incident in your past that you can't even remember, she almost deletes that energy so that you can move on stronger, more assured for the directions that you're going. So, and I want the readers to check out John's website, too. It's illum.com, I-L-L-U-I-M.
No, U-M-I-N.
Say that again.
I-L-L-U-M-I-N.com.
That's what happens to you, the dyslexic host. Anyways, it's wonderful. You can just tell from the artwork on there and the covers of the books. You've got over 30 books, don't you, of children's books?
We've got 30, soon there'll be 36 children's books. And our four adult books, two of them are about Sai Baba.
Wonderful. Hey, you've had some miracles in your life. I know we're jumping all around in the show. Oh, first, did you think of something to share more on the publishing business?
Well, you know, since we're talking about miracles and publishing, I think my travels to India are what got me into publishing in the first place. And so I've been there 17 times. I've been able to see mainly Sai Baba, Satya Sai Baba, but also a wonderful soul called Amachi, Amrita Nandamayi. Also, a brilliant new light on the spiritual horizon, who is all over our country now, is Swami Nityananda, Paramahansa Nityananda. And then Karunamayi, yeah, but mainly seeing Sai Baba. And it's, I don't know, spend a couple minutes on it?
Yes, I'd like to, because I know
them.
Sai Baba is like almost number one with miracles. Have you seen miracles around him?
I've seen personally so many miracles right in front of my nose, materializations. But here's a story of somebody who most people know about, is a man named Isaac Tigret. Isaac was, he tells a fascinating story. It was recorded in 1994. This is a speech he gave, talking about his childhood as being the middle boy of a family of three boys, growing up in a place called Jackson, Tennessee. Got in a fight with his youngest brother when he was 13 years old, and during this fight, a bank of dirt collapsed on top of his brother.
Uh-oh.
Well, he managed to finally pull him out, but the brother had died.
Mm-hmm.
The dad had a large factory where there's quite a few employees. He ended up in his grieving process, letting the whole thing collapse. The parents, both they got divorced. There was an older brother in the family. He ended up going into some kind of institution and then committed suicide. So this very unhappy
sounds like
boy,
a bad book.
Very unhappy boy named Isaac Tigret heads to London when he's 15 years old with his dad to get away from Tennessee. And at age 19, he sets up a restaurant called the Hard Rock Cafe. Well, a few years go by, and he is instantly successful because the Beatles and the Stones are his clients and the people waiting around the block at his restaurant. And he has an inspiration. He should buy the movie rights to a book called The Secret Life of Plants. An amazing book that proves that plants have feelings. And he then talks Stevie Wonder, after the book goes on to the bestseller list, talks Stevie Wonder into doing the video. And together in 1974, two of them are touring the world, not intending to see Sai Baba when they're in India, but once you get over there, everyone hears about him.
Mm-hmm.
And they go to see him, and he comes up to them right away, and he waves his hand, and out of his hand comes this healing ash. And he gives it to them both, and called Vibhuti. Well, people in those days, he was doing that probably 15 times a day, so very quickly, that's kind of like old hat when you're around him. But Isaac got pretty inspired. He came back to the ashram then for the next 15 years, every year at least once or usually twice for a week or two. And Sai Baba ignored him every time he was there. He got no attention whatsoever. And we all felt kind of sorry for him. He was one of the saddest looking guys on the planet at that point. And anyway, he described, though, in the speech in 1994, by which time he was a radiant being, two of the things that kept his attention during the 70s. One is getting drunk at the Beverly Hills Hard Rock Cafe, driving his Porsche convertible 90 miles an hour the way home, and falling asleep. He then wakes up after his car has crashed through a barrier. It's going over a 300-foot cliff.
Wow.
So his car is spinning around in the air as it's going down, but he feels Sai Baba sitting in the seat beside him with his arm around him. Well, the car lands and is totally demolished, and he doesn't even have a scratch. He walks away, gets on the plane the next day to go thank Baba, totally ignored as usual. We noticed early on that the sign above the eating hall at Sai Baba's ashram says, "Love all, serve all." That became the motto of Hard Rock Cafes around the world. So anyway, a few years go by, and Isaac is in Denver, Colorado, where I am now, wow, sitting on the floor of his hotel room. I'm sitting on the floor of the merchandise mart, that he was doing some kind of drugs. He went to an overdose, went to an epileptic fit, swallowed his tongue, and choked to death. So his corpse was on the floor, his light body was up in the ceiling, and he heard a voice said, "Call on your guru." Well, he called Baba's name, and instantly Baba's in the room physically, picked his body up off the floor, put it on the bed, pulled his tongue out, put his hand in his chest, and said, "Come back," which Isaac did, still having epilepsy. After getting out of the hospital, a few days later, he goes to thank Swami, totally ignored as usual.
Oh, no.
Finally, 1986, Baba said, "You come," which is what everybody wants. See, these days, there's probably 10,000 people every day wanting, just coming to see him. And for his birthday, Sai Baba's birthday, when he was 75, 1 million people came to the party.
Quite a party.
So anyway, 1986, Baba says, "You come." And the first question he asks him in the interview, he says, "Where is God?" Isaac says, "Well, Swami, he's in my heart." Baba says, "No. Think like a fish. A fish is swimming through the ocean. There's water above the fish, below the fish, on both sides of the fish,
and
inside the fish. You're like a fish swimming through God. How do you reach God?" Well, Isaac didn't want to answer that question, but Baba winks at him and he says, "Love all, serve all. That's how you reach God." Well, it turned out Isaac sold the Hard Rock that year for $108 million, and he put half the money into a hospital in India that's a wonder of the world. It looks a bit like the Taj Mahal. They do things like heart surgery, brain surgery, liver transplants, all these. It's called a super specialty hospital.
Changing lives on a daily basis by minute.
Well, they had the first 1,000 heart operations there with no loss of life. And it turned out there was never any charge to the patients. Everything's free there. Like in all the educational and all the hospitals Sai Baba does, everything's free. And so the last part of the story is Isaac and Sai Baba and the first staff of 20 doctors are sitting around a table when it's going to be right before it opens in the year 1994. And Baba points to Isaac and he says, "I saved this man's life twice." Then he winks at him and says, "More than that, really." Anyway, there's thousands of stories like that, and so I won't go on and on, but if you want to talk about miracles, there's nobody on the planet who's doing them in such a...
So, now, do they just type Sai Baba as S-A-I?
S-A-I-B-A-B-A means Divine Mother Father.
Mm-hmm.
In this incarnation, most people know what he looks like. He's a 5-foot-tall black man with a big Afro hairdo. He's going to die he's going to leave the planet when he's 95, which is 2021. He's already announced what his third lifetime will look like. He's going to look like Jesus. He's going to be named Prima Sai Baba. But he said in that lifetime, he'll be all female energy in the male body. Because it's the female energy necessary to usher in the golden age of peace to last 1,000 years on the planet or more.
Well, we're ready.
Well, we're going there. That's the direction we're heading, and he just said there's nothing that's going to stop it.
And so he's been a great inspiration to you and keeping you on the road and focused, hasn't he?
Well, you're psychic. Yeah. Yeah, it's been an interesting association, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, he's been I don't know if channeling is quite the word, but he's been channeling through a man from Ottawa, Canada for the last 7 years. So I've been able to see him about 7 times in North America over the last 7 years. Or actually, maybe since 2003, but we won't go there too much because that's something that he totally denies doing in India, and so it's kind of controversial.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, back to your books. You've got the two coming out this year, and it looks like you're author of one of the books on your page, too.
Well, I authored one from last year called Just Imagine, and it's a beautifully illustrated book where, generally, the children are in the hands of God on every page. And how it started was getting a submission from an artist named Steve Jameson, and we got the submission probably 3 or 4 years ago. And we just kind of fell in love with this art concept, and so a writing partner of mine named George Schultz wrote the words to go with the art.
Well, it's so beautiful. The cover has got God's hands with children. One's dressed as a pirate. There's a cat there. There's his puppies.
Yeah, it's just so intricate. And
butterflies.
It starts out, our treehouse is a magic place in safe hands among the leaves where we can be whatever we want anytime we choose.
You know, and the clouds in the sky look like they're whales and ships.
Yeah, he's got quite an imagination, that artist.
The detail's awesome.
And we won in a Seal of Excellence from Creative Child magazine for that book. And then our other book that last year called, it's a wonderful story called Mrs. Murphy's Marvelous Mansion. Here we have Mrs. Murphy being this quirky little lady, and she lives in this tiny, tiny house right in the center of the turnaround in this posh neighborhood, and the neighbors wonder how she can even turn around inside her house. And one day they find a sign for the finest neighborhood contest, and each neighbor has great ideas in improving the neighborhood, make it even finer. But then, as soon as Mrs. Murphy walks away, they all start complaining about her house. Oh, it doesn't have this, it doesn't have that. It should be torn down, said Mr. Brown. Oh my, says Mrs. Murphy. On the inside, my house is very fine indeed. I insist you join me for lunch tomorrow. Of course, when you walk in Mrs. Murphy's house, it's huge inside. When you see the kitchen, you've got that book. I think you've seen the kitchen scene with robots in the kitchen busily preparing the lunch. And so that's, of course, the obvious message there is don't judge a book by the cover, although you sure have to worry about what the cover looks like in doing book, because books do judge it by the cover. But
well, I see even Bernie Siegel, author of Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, He did a review that said Mrs. Murphy's Marvelous Mansion helps us to see that we are all one family. When we become aware that we are all the same inside, understanding and healing occur. With each of us lies beauty, wisdom, and truth. A vital lesson for every child to learn. Who can forget the age-old message, you don't judge a book by its cover?
Yeah.
That's wonderful. So it's been quite a journey in the publishing business, hasn't it?
I've learned so much. I really, really, really wish that I had known when I started what I knew now. Of course, actually, if I had known when I started what I knew
now, you wouldn't have done it right.
I probably would have saved all that money.
Well, you see, it's like most people who dream. You're just brave and you jump into it because you know you can do it. You've done a beautiful job.
Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate all the, we've had so many helpful people. We've got a staff of folks all over the country, actually 5 people who on a volunteer basis help us edit.
Wonderful. Because they believe.
Mm-hmm. And they just see the, it's one of their gifts, and they're willing to share with us because they feel like we've shared with other people, and we did. 2 years ago, form a foundation called Inspire Every Child. And if anybody feels inspired, that charity gives inspiring children's books to kids in need.
That was wonderful.
That's inspire-every-child.org.
Thank you.
Do
it again so if somebody wasn't ready, they can hear it.
Beg pardon?
Oh, could you repeat the website again in case somebody wasn't ready?
inspire-every-child.org.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, one of my favorite books is To Sleep with the Angels. It's the first one that I came across. And the angels that are drawn in that book, they're every outfit's different. You have like a Native American Indian and a Black Indian and a White Indian, but their garb is incredible.
Mm. That was one of our first angel book. Angels, angels all around. Angels, angels comes around. Hold my hand throughout the night. Guide me from the dark to light. It's a real treasure of a book for the youngest kids.
Well, it's beautiful. I think it's one that you can teach them the little prayers in it and then have for their whole life. But just like I said earlier, children who can't read can take these books and enjoy them. And even grandmas who are listening to the show, if they go to Barnes & Noble, if they go to your website and order your books or see you at the Denver Merchandise Mart or Puyallup or wherever you happen to be, they'll just stand there and flip through the pages. You must watch people at your booth standing there smiling, flipping pages.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like I said, I really enjoy these shows. So that's part of, obviously, what makes it work for me. One of our books that is one of my most fun ones to watch women with, especially, is called The Mother's Promise. Do we have a... I don't have a clock anywhere near here. What's the
timing? It's 10:02.
Can I do a minute?
Yes, yes,
of that
please.
One? So this is one that where an amazing picture is on the cover of a little baby's hand holding the mom's hand. And it goes, "When you were born, I promised to help you remember all you've forgotten. I promised the ocean you'll hear the beating of its heart against the shores. I promised the forest you'll share the whispers of their pines. I promised the desert you'll feel its warm breath on your cheek. I promised the mountains you'll sit on their broad shoulders and wonder. I promised the stars you'll follow their pathways and hear their stories. I promised the world's sacred places I will teach you honor. I promised the world's creatures I will teach you respect. I promise the world's people I will teach you to love, just as I promised to always love you. And the universe will answer, creating you from the white sands of Egypt, the emerald moss of the ancient forest, the blue salt of the Pacific, where the winds lace you together with silvery moonlight. And when you arrive, you will recognize me. We will celebrate the joy of our togetherness. Beneath the light of your first dawn, the sun will wash you in gold and welcome you again as you remember your promise to the world." Called The Mother's Promise, brilliantly illustrated by David Danioff.
That's beautiful. And in your reviews, Judy Ford, who's been on Oprah several times,
mm-hmm.
and author of Between Mother and Daughter, wrote, "A sweethearted celebration of motherly love. What a wonderful way to prepare for welcoming a soul."
Mm.
Lovely. Well, each of your books, but my favorite is The Square-Headed Little Girl. I could really resonate with that. She just didn't fit in. She was like a square peg in a round hole in the universe.
Fascinating author of that book is Peggy O'Neill. By the way, I must mention that on one called The Mother's Promise, that it was written by a beautiful teacher from Los Angeles named Lisa Humphrey.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote it when a friend asked her, after our national tragedy earlier in the century, asked her about whether it was safe to bring a child in, and that was Lisa's answer.
Oh, that's a good answer, isn't it?
But Peggy O'Neill is a super soul. If you ever meet her, be sure and get a hug from her. her website is yopeggy.com.
I've met several of your authors, and I know you choose their work before you meet them. And one I stayed with, I believe it was New York City, we were roommates. I have to tell you, she was just handpicked and lovely.
Which one?
The pear book. The yellow
pear. Yellow pear tomatoes.
Yes.
Oh, beautiful lady. Yes.
So that was a joy to meet her.
Yeah, Little Yellow Pear Tomatoes was up for 5 different awards last year.
Wonderful.
A wonderful story that basically sees the entire universe through a little girl's love of yellow pear tomatoes.
And what was interesting is she didn't really mean to write the book and send it in, did she?
Well, actually, she had submitted something else.
Yeah.
That we toyed with for quite a while, and it just didn't quite work for what we were doing. But she was an excellent author, Damien Yumei, U-M-E-I. And so when she happened to submit that during the discussion process on the other book, and we said, well, that's more what we're looking for, so that's the one we did.
Yeah, and she's a beautiful singer. I have her CD, too. Do you remember her website by any chance?
Oh, boy.
Oh, they can. On their website, they can go check out your...
Mm-hmm.
for information, which once again
little
is...
Little yellow pear tomatoes.
Yeah, www, well, we don't say that, it's illumin.com, I-L-L-U-M-I-N.
.com.
Yes, and that's the place to go and enjoy, especially if you're going to be picking out children's books. I don't want to make the show like a commercial, but I can't help it.
Well, keep going. I don't mind.
But it's just wonderful what you've done for people, how you've educated the next generation. And even as adults, I remember when Ariel wanted me to read stories when she was little. I'm like, oh, I've heard this 32 times.
I know.
It put me to sleep. Well, reading your book, it's like every page is like for the first time. They're so fresh. Because as you're looking at the artwork, you see new things.
You know, one of my favorite sweet stories is called One Smile. And it's a really sweet story that I tried telling at church one day and had a hard time, but it's a little girl walking through the park with her mom to catch a bus because the van's been repaired. They see a sergeant guy that had been lost his job and been moping all morning. Nobody paid much attention to him, and she just gives him a huge smile. Well, he gets so inspired by her smile, he gets up and starts looking for a job. And along the way, he sees a lady needs her tire changed and gladly helps her out, and lunch that day, that lady leaves a huge tip for the waitress. One of the home buys picnic stuff for the kids. One boy said, let's invite the family next door. They just moved to town. The family's having a tremendous time at the picnic, and that little girl calls her grandma that night. We might like the city after all. We just made friends. Well, grandma shares the good news with the rest of the kids and some animal stickers. One boy gets in the way to a doctor's appointment, and he's all cheered up and doesn't get so worried about getting a shot at the doctor's office. He sits down next to a little girl, been crying all morning with a cast on her arm, and shares his stickers with her. And well, now she starts giggling with him, and he's put stickers on her cast. And so her grateful dad can rush her back home, and he rushes back to his auto shop. And at the end of that night, here comes a boy looking for a job.
What goes around comes around, doesn't it?
And the first job that he has is finishing the repair work on the van so this little girl and her mom can go to Grandpa's birthday party after all.
Wonderful.
The smile he remembered very well. The smile that was changing the world.
That's what I love about your books. They just put a smile on your face. And our time's come to an end.
Well, it's been so nice chatting. And I will put out an offer to anybody who's heard this. Is that anybody who's heard this and goes to any one of those shows that I mentioned and mentions having heard my offer, they can buy any of our books in any quantity for half off the normal price.
Wow. Now, are your events, are they listed on your website?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, John. And I want to tell the listeners to remember to listen to Atira next week on BBS Radio, Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time or 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Metaphysical straight talk from the heart from our mystical friend, Atira. Atira is an approved Edgar Cayce Association reader and is a sought-after speaker and reader about spiritual and metaphysical matters. And remember, to get a blow-your-socks-off reading, contact Atira by sending an email. I'll respond to it. Angel Readings at angelscribe.com. Now, to purchase my autographed books, I've got two sensational books. Expect Miracles, published in four languages. I promise to send it to you in English. And A Christmas Filled with Miracles. They are listed on angelscribe.com. Just let me know who you'd like them autographed to. Also, if you know someone who is editor of a magazine or a newspaper who would love a successful, proven miracle column or a pet column, I've got 2,000 stories of all lengths that I can share with them. It takes one person to connect you to one person to have your dream come true. I've learned that. The world is in great need of inspiration and hope, and the media knows that good news sells and attracts readers. Honest to goodness, you can only read about Iraq so many times. Now, I also want to mention that I was on front page of the Eugene Register Guard this week because I've been on a project I coordinated with our local fire department. We have a firefighter, Tim Wilson, who has Lou Gehrig's disease, and I put a procession together of our apparatus, and we drove out to Tim's house with all the lights on and the bells and the whistles, and he was sitting in his wheelchair in front of a bonfire. We spent a lovely hour with him and presented him with a fire hat. But we've got a photo of him on the in the newspaper, and everybody Stay tuned for TIER next week. Thank you for joining us. And thank you, Dawn. Bye-bye.
It's clear to me.